This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. 6 a.m, Monday the 19th of October. It's the start of yet another exciting week, guys. But first, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was rather eventful.
Oh, really?
But interesting nevertheless. And I'm certainly looking forward to this week again with you guys.
See the intrigue there? It was interesting, but she's not going to give us any details about how and why it was interesting.
This is the equivalent of saying, yeah, you know, I did some things, met some people, but, you know, that's all.
That's all you deserve to know about my life.
Yeah, you just see the length of the skirt and that's it. Right?
So, a bit of clues of what the excitement that was going on,
exciting.
Is it? My weekend was interesting nonetheless. I'll leave it there as well.
Okay, this is a very informative morning it's turning out to be.
The most informative.
At 6 a.m., yes.
At 6 a.m.
Bigly informative.
But hopefully the rest of the hour is going to be even more informative. In fact, we've got a number of interesting topics lined up for you. Later on after the 6:30 news, we're looking internationally. What do we have, Noel?
It has to be New Zealand, right? Mm-hmm. We have to talk about her landslide win.
Who's her? Oh, Miss Arden. Ah, okay.
Mysterious. Mysterious morning. Mysterious 6 a.m. Anyway, beyond that, you know, it's refreshing. It's nice to see a bit of good news at international, because normally it's always quite a pessimistic affair. But speaking of pessimistic affairs, we're going to be taking a look at COVID-19 numbers at the 6:45 quarter, as well as the look at what's happening politically in the country. And closer to where we are right now, at around 6:15, about 10 minutes, what bad career advice have you heard? We're going to be delving into that in a little bit, because I asked some people on Instagram over the weekend. There were some interesting responses.
All right. So if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're talking about online master's degrees and whether they're worth the money. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Maggie May by Rod Stewart, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, you know, during this pandemic, a lot of people have decided to utilise their time spent at home in order to pick up a new skill, perhaps do some learning that they may not have had the chance to do otherwise, even more so if you're in the unfortunate position of having work not work out at this present point in time. A lot of people, I think, have turned to forms of online learning because universities have started offering their classes online. Now, CNBC is looking at the question of whether or not an online master's degree is worth the money. And they're considering a couple of factors, right? Like talking about opportunity cost and talking about how during this pandemic, the cost of taking time off to go and do your master's is perhaps a little bit less than it would be otherwise, particularly if you're already finding work. You know, you're not spending as much time at work, or your working hours have been cut down.
Yeah, so I think there are some positive attributes, you know, getting onto an online university course or even just an online course, right? I think it provides you the opportunity to upskill, to reskill, and especially in very new areas where your local university, a physical presence, may not actually be very advanced in the subject, for example, data science, advanced computer science, and so forth. And but of course, there is some downside because it really depends on actually the institution's mm-hmm. preparedness in delivering these courses online, right? I have friends who complain, like even very established names, the videos can just go on for 1 hour, just 1 hour monotonous lecture. So, you know, the experience itself may not be that pleasant, but I think there will be some longer term upside.
Yeah, it is the opportunity cost is always that important thing to take into account, right? Because when you do go and do your master's, if you're working, what you're giving up is those 2 years of earnings. So it's not mm-hmm. just how much you pay for the master's, but the cost could be way more than that. If you earn, an example, 4,000 ringgit a month, that's 50,000 ringgit a year. You're giving up an additional 100,000 on top of the money you're paying for the master's program. But right now, it's a situation of where people have to make do with the fact that unemployment is going to be here for a while. Maybe you have to upskill. Maybe some jobs have been displaced. So this could be a good time to look at online courses. Now, my big, I think, pet peeve with online courses is you cannot be charging the same amount as you did as you do for charging in class university. I seriously disagree with this because the overheads for charging, the overheads involved in online are significantly different from going to university. You're not going to campus. You don't have. Why should I be paying for the maintenance of halls and classrooms and things like that? That's on the business of the university to deal with. Online classes should be a different set of overheads, a different set of costs associated, and should be cheaper. And I've always wanted this to happen, but it has to happen at the right value and the right price.
Yeah, so this is an interesting subject, right? Because I think the online experience also, you have to address that when you're talking about taking an online master's. Because like you said, Roshan, you know, you're not going to campus. You're not experiencing halls. You're not experiencing campus life. And I enjoyed my 3 years of university. And if I were to go back and do a postgraduate, I would also want that semblance of university life. But online, you don't really get that. And a lot of the times, if you are sitting at your computer for a 1 hour one-way lecture, it's somehow a lot more difficult than actually being present for a 1 hour lecture in person. So it's the requirements of the teachers as well as of yourself are different, because it also means that the onus is very much on yourself to study on your own, to work on your own, to complete projects in effectively in isolation, which can be quite difficult, because at least when you're in class, you're surrounded by students, much like when you're working in the office versus working from home, right? You are motivated by the collective drive of the people around you.
Yeah, so I think if I so the answer is actually not a straightforward one,
no,
right?
It's
so
not.
Online university, yes, it gives you that platform to learn new knowledge. Not sure about acquiring new skills necessarily, but it really depends how the courses are structured and set up. And personally, I would prefer also a physical presence, you know, just to be able to be in a university setting and all that. But I've also come to a conclusion that I feel like I still need to earn an income.
Mm-hmm.
And so a part-time online university thing works for me. And especially if I'm trying to access to a very good brand name university, a foreign university. So, for example, I've been looking at this course, neuroscience and psychology, by King's College, and I mean it's a very well known university in the field of psychology. So, for me to access that, to go there, actually do a master's, will be expensive simply because of the cost of living.
Yeah.
But the cost of the course is about the same. It's £20,000 to do it online. So it's still very expensive. But what King's College has set it up to be, you can do diploma level, then postgraduate diploma level, then master's. So you can stop at any point.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to universities being disrupted by other players, right? where are the FANG stocks for universities? Really, we need someone to come here.
Apple will just set up one soon.
Yeah, because when you think about it, the big universities are essentially oligopolies who say, hey, you know what, we're going to charge this amount and we don't care whether you can afford it, because in this globalized world, or what was a globalized world, they could attract students from around the world, and they will just attract the top people who can pay, right? Or they have their endowment funds for scholarships and whatever said and done, they're targeting the 1 or 10% of the world and no longer the country in which they are based. But now in this fragmented globalized world, I wonder how that's going to change. Because, I mean, you can try and charge people £20,000 for an online course, but in this situation where masters aren't worth as much as they used to be, and degrees aren't as valuable as they used to be, now it's about skills, it's about certifications.
And portfolio of work.
Portfolio
your
of
interest.
Work. We're seeing more freelance, more side gig. The long-term long-term employability has changed significantly. How is that going to change education? I mean, over the last 6 months, a lot of my friends have done the MDEC partner with Coursera. They did a lot of the courses for IT and stuff, and it's helped them in terms of qualifications and employability, especially in this larger unemployed market.
Well, let us know what you think about this as well. You can tell us whether you think an online master's degree is worth the money. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. But up next, we're looking at some pieces of career advice that it's maybe okay to ignore. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Shakedown Street by Unknown Mortal Orchestra, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, especially when you're first starting out in your working life, right, it feels like everyone has an opinion on how you should be going for interviews, how you should be conducting yourself in the workplace, what jobs and careers you might be potentially pursuing. And everyone has a piece of advice to impart. So the Harvard Business Review has an interesting article looking at what pieces of career advice is actually just okay to completely ignore. And it's quite a funny read, mostly because I think I've heard every single one of these. one of these is the classic, just be yourself, right? Because, and it says here, this might be one of the most overused and harmful pieces of career advice ever given, because particularly in a job interview, right? You know, there's a line between or for what you should and shouldn't say in a job interview if you actually want to get the job.
Yeah, no, this is something I really like. Actually, if you take a look at this article, all four tips are really good and really well explained. Now, there is a difference between authenticity and just being yourself. The point here is to be honest in a way that is presentable as well. No one wants you to lie about who you are. But just being yourself, it implies that you can be your home self at the workplace. No, these are two very different things. You don't bring your home self to the office, and you shouldn't bring your office self to the home as well. But authenticity means that you are not inherently lying to the world and to yourself about who you are, right? And misrepresenting yourself. That's another thing. So it's, although the what is the word here? The feeling of the sentence, just be yourself, it comes from a good place. It's also misplaced if used if you take it too far.
Yeah, so I think you shouldn't take it so literally. It's more deeper than that, right? It's not just about being yourself. I feel it's about, you know, being as best as you can be, or presenting yourself to me in the best light with all your strengths and weaknesses, and being very self-aware is perhaps the word for me. And this other tip here, letting your achievements speak for themselves. Yeah, so I think I would say I'm guilty of this, right? So you do need to talk about them, because interviewers are not telepathic, right? They may see a lot of information on your CV, but you need to tell them and need to be quite explicit about them.
Yeah, this is where communication is so important, right? And I think there is a sense of culture here that speaks to the situation as well, about how people like, oh, it shouldn't be boastful about the situation. No, this is about building your brand. And in today's noisy world, you have to find a way to do that. That's why I encourage everyone I know who has a career, even if you don't have a career, start your LinkedIn now and start building that up and learn how to do that. Because this is how you're going to have to cut through the noise. This is how you have to tell someone. This is, I think some people like to refer to it as the humble brag. I disagree. I think it's just stating the things you've done and your achievements, and no one should be ashamed of that. Now, don't go around shouting it out to the world either, right? Don't go tell every Tom, Dick and Harry, oh, I've done this in my life. No, there are certain ways you can go about it, but you have to find a way to communicate the things you've done. And if you don't say it, no one's going to say it. You can't hope for a hero or a cheerleader to come in and shout out your achievements. Your parents aren't going to follow you everywhere.
I think the biggest problem with all of these pieces of advice listed in this article is that they're very reductive, right? You know, it lacks nuance, because it says it's things like one of the pieces of advice here is follow your passion. And just telling someone, oh, you know, follow your passion, without considering things like, you know, you the reality of the situation. Do you have a safety net? Do you have effectively the back end support? Is your idea viable? You know, yes, on the one hand, you should be brave enough to take that step, but you also need to be realistic. You can't go into things blind. So a lot of these pieces of advice, they sound fantastic when you give it, but unless you have a discussion about what it really means when you say, you know, follow your passion or just be yourself, it can very easily be taken, you know, in a completely different direction. I think one of the worst pieces of advice I ever received early on in my career was, don't ask questions. You're going to sound nobody's going to hold your hand. You just have to figure it out yourself. And I tried that in the very early days of like interning and the early days of my career, and I made some mistakes. They were not great, and they could have been solved by just, you know, being upfront about the fact that I don't know how to do this. Could you show me, and then I'll figure it out myself.
Yeah, so I think that is probably the most sensible thing. So like this thing about passion, yeah, it has to be more nuanced than that. Because passion itself, wanting to pursue your passion or what you think in your mind is passion, could be a way of avoiding something, could be a way of avoiding adult responsibilities, about avoiding hardship, like, you know, studying for exams, putting in more hours to improve on something that you are not so familiar with. And we tend to give up easily and say, this is not something I'm passionate about. And then you shift course and you keep finding yourself shifting course all the time, and that could be just very well about avoiding something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is so important to hear, right? Don't use passion as the excuse and the scapegoat for, that's why I'm not doing this. There are plenty of things in life that you're going to have to do that you don't like doing. That's the reality of life. And I would encourage everyone to check out this TEDx talk that I watched a few years back. It's called by Terry Trespicio about passion. And it was really, really put passion into my context. And that's Trespicio, Terry Trespicio. It's a tough name, but just type in Terry and passion on TEDx, and I'm sure you'll find it there. I highly, highly encourage you to just watch that.
All right. And in the meantime, do let us know what you think about this as well. What bad career advice have you heard? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up, but first here is The Smiths with Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Rilo Kiley with The Moneymaker, and you're listening to BFM 89.9, of course you are. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanizan and Noel Lim. 6:39 a.m, Monday the 19th of October, and we're turning our attention to the news that's been happening in other countries around the world this morning, particularly over in New Zealand, where Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has won a landslide victory in the country's general election. So with all the votes tallied, Ardern's Labour Party, which is veers a little bit more centre-left, they won 49.1% of the vote. So that brings a projected 64 seats. It's a rare outright parliamentary majority.
Yes, indeed. Such a historic win for her. I guess, in my eyes, she's, you know, quite inspirational. You know, her messages about being kind, being compassionate, be strong, you know, those kind of things resonate with me, and perhaps it resonates with a lot of New Zealanders as well. And she's been credited to for, you know, keeping this COVID-19 under control. But of course, you know, people say New Zealand is so remote, right? You know, it's really quite easy to put that under control. But I think now her work is really cut out for her, the economy, unemployment, and even some of her social policies still need to see some results. And so, you know, the work has just begun again for her.
Yeah, no, this is really, I mean, you know, I made the joke earlier in the hour that when we talk about international, it's generally a bit of a pessimistic affair. This is really, really, for lack of a better word, awesome to see, really. I'm just, it's a very nice to see a lack of populism, or at least a bit of positivity in terms of elections, right? I mean, Ardern has done so well even before this. The way her tone in this, the aftermath of the Christchurch shooting, the way she addressed it, she didn't lean into hate and essentially racism at that point. And winning, this is the first time a single party has gotten majority in parliament since 1993, when New Zealand introduced the mixed majority proportional system, mixed member proportional representation. That was in 1996. So they've got a proportional system as well, which is also a testament to the progressiveness of their electoral system. And in a world where you see so much, anger and hate, it's nice to see that this win comes out, and it's a strong win.
And I guess this is Jacinda Ardern's a good example of how a crisis can really either make or break a leader and a government, because we have seen other countries around the world, you know, administrations haven't dealt so well with the COVID-19 pandemic. Their messaging hasn't been as coherent. Perhaps they've, decided to point the finger rather than turn their lens onto their own people and their own the issues within their own country that have led to COVID-19 spikes. But, you know, we also can't forget that we see Jacinda Ardern appear on our news feeds whenever New Zealand is undergoing a crisis. But within her own country, she was also facing some problems going into the general election, because the fact of New Zealand's political system meant that her coalition government had a lot of difficulty pushing policy through. So she wasn't actually as effective as perhaps she wanted to be in her first term. But at least now she has another 3 years in order to work on these things. And she's gotten that political capital from how well she's handled, they've handled the pandemic.
Yeah, so she's basically not going to have a legislative body that's going to block her, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the biggest parallel that comes to mind when I think about this is Barack Obama, who basically only had 2 years where the House was in his favor. And then the other 6 years, Mitch McConnell and co. really made it a hard time. Until today, Mitch McConnell, who is the U.S. Senate Majority Leader, is still pulling the strings behind the Republican Party. We look at the president as the authority in terms of where the powers lie. No, look at the Senate, look at the Republican Party, and realize who's really pulling the strings there. But essentially, it's nice to see that she's going to be able to push her agenda across. Yes, she's going to have to make sure that the party toes the line in general, but it's not, hopefully, it's not going to be an obstructive nature, which is the nature of what U.S. politics is today. Look at the stimulus package. They haven't been able to pass anything, and now there's a 48-hour deadline to work something out. It's just such obstructive, divisive politics.
Yeah, so just very quickly on Jacinda. She came in, I think, the youngest mm-hmm. Prime Minister, right, in New Zealand. And so I think this really gives me a lot of hope, right? You know, she comes in with the necessary wisdom and the moral courage. And also, she doesn't have baggage. And I think that's just so relevant. And I think about Malaysia, right? That's my immediate thought about Malaysia. And that's just what we need, right? Politicians with no more baggage to just come in and to have that moral leadership, that courage to do what is needed, and to be very firm in their conviction or what their vision is for Malaysia.
Yeah, so, well, I guess we'll have to hold out and see whether or not we do eventually get that kind of a politician come GE15, I guess, which is when our next general election is due, unless, of course, it gets called earlier. But then with COVID-19 in the picture, really, who knows? But we're going to be taking a look at our local papers and portals next, so be sure to stay tuned. But first, some messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was With or Without You by U2, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now we are looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning, and of course the Star here I have in front of me, they've gone with a political headline. So here it's the headline is Talks to Cool Political Heat. So these are to do with two major meetings that are set to take place this week, which could determine our country's political direction. So one is the meeting between Muafakat Nasional, which will happen today. So this is going to discuss the strained relationship between UMNO and Bersatu. And tomorrow, UMNO Supreme Council members will also talk about the party's cooperation with Perikatan Nasional. So some very exciting political news to watch out for this week. But the picture here is of the preparations for Deepavali, which are also coming up in about a month, right?
Yep, and it is happening in about a month. And I really hope that people start acknowledge the fact that Deepavali comes first before Christmas.
I know, right? Some people are now talking about Christmas presents.
Yes, you know, this is something that's happened year on year, and it's good. And but now the malls are not going to be as packed as they used to be. But it used to always irk me that Christmas was acknowledged before Deepavali had ended. But that's just a personal thing, right? But I'm very sure I'm not the only one who feels this way. But you know, speaking of politics, Lynn, we're going to be talking to Dr. Hamidin, who is a research fellow at the Ilham Center, in an hour to break this down, because it is really such a confusing state of affairs right now. What is UMNO's position here? Do they back the Prime Minister? I mean, on Friday we had YB Kari Jamaluddin on the show, and he without doubt said he supported the government, and Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin said he did not support Anwar. So, but within UMNO, there's a lot of news and rumors around the different factions supporting different parts of it. And then on top of that, you've got this rumor and talk around a cabinet reshuffle possibly in the works to maybe appease the unappeased at this point.
And so many people want to become prime minister, right? And like what Kairi says, 222 MPs do want to become prime minister.
What was it he said at the end of the grill when Xiaoning asked him whether he wanted to be prime minister? And he says, basically said, every politician wants to be prime minister.
Yeah,
we should play a game. Who wants to be prime minister? That's a new game show. Again, another idea from The Morning Run. Someone produced that show.
Yeah, it's a card game. If you put it as a card game, it will never end, right? It will just go on till past midnight. Well, interestingly, New Straits Times has decided to just sort of toned down on politics, and they have put COVID-19 on the front page with this barbed wire picture, quite a nice picture actually. And so,
a nice picture of barbed wire.
I mean, from a photographic value and angle okay, and okay. blah blah.
It shows the drama and the seriousness of the situation.
Yes,
it's the qualitative
army, pictures of the army.
Yeah, you know, we can only use words to describe to everyone listening right now.
Yeah, the pictures depth worth a of thousand the picture, words,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And we need to say okay. a thousand words to describe that picture.
Yes. So now you know people are saying, why is it that we went from two people per table in a restaurant to four people and then to five people? And it looks like we are rolling back on some measures. But mm-hmm. what is interesting, NST is reporting that the Health Ministry has called for movement restrictions to be tightened further and stricter SOPs. Dr. Noor Tan Sri, Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah, the health DG, said that this following a resurgence of COVID-19 cases with Malaysia. Now, we may think, you know, those of us who live in Klang Valley may think, oh, this is going to be just a Sabah problem. No, he's still worried about Klang Valley, and he thinks that SOPs in Klang Valley itself should be tightened.
Yeah, there's the Star also has another article talking about the infectivity rates of COVID-19 and in this third wave. So the Health Director General Tan Sri Noor Hisham said that the R0, so that's the level of that's how infective the COVID-19 virus is. It has come down from 2.2 to 1.5. So it's good that it's come down, but nevertheless, you know, it seems to be a little bit more stubborn than it was during the second wave of infections. And ideally, you want the value to fall below one, which means that it's not spreading. Your cases are no longer increasing. So that's something that still everyone needs to take care with SOPs, adhere to all the SOPs in place, as well as practice just general good hygiene. Because, you know, that's, you know, Hisham has come to say that one of the reasons is complacency, right, when it came to these to following SOPs.
Oh, for sure, right. And this is about reducing the rate of infection and spread. And reducing it is, and then maintaining that reduction, because the problem here arises when the rate of infection starts to look like it's on a positive trend. That's when we have to get worried. It's not entirely about the number of cases at hand. You can have a small amount of cases, but if the trend shows that it's a compounding,
rising very quickly,
yeah, geometric progression, then that's a concern to be had, and then that's why you have to have the SOPs. Just do your best to reduce your infection ability, right? Whether it's washing your hands, I'm making up words this morning, but the point still gets across. Wash your hands, wear your mask, keep your distance. These are all things that increase the barrier and the hurdle requirement for COVID-19 to jump from person to person.
So I think for me, on a personal level, we think that, you know, if we do all that, we'll be okay. And if we are fairly healthy, we'll be okay. So I do know of someone who personally, she passed away due to COVID-19. So, you know, it's really real, right? You know, if someone you know, someone fairly healthy and quite young passes away, it's quite sad.
Yeah, it's really about, everything is a number until it comes into your circle of influence, and then it becomes real. And to everyone like listening, like, remember that there is someone who has suffered from this virus out there, whether it may not be a fatality or death, but sickness, job losses, this is something that the rate, and irrespective of however this resurged, we have to work together to bring it back down, irrespective of our feelings about it and the anger that may be around it.
Absolutely. It's not just about you individually, it's about your community and the people around you. Okay, right now we are about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then after that we're going to be bringing you more business news and analysis. But first, here is some music. Stevie Wonder with I Was Made to Love You, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.